Cape Talk.
Call 021 446 0567.
Gavin Gray brings us up to speed with what's happening in the international world. Gavin, a very good morning and welcome on a Sunday morning again.
Good morning, Zach.
The two left fighting it out in the next UK PM have set out sort of competing plans to deal with the economic recession. I think that probably would have been one of the big focuses in terms of an election campaign. You know, this recession was forecast by the Bank of England.
Yes, the Bank of England gave a really, really pessimistic outline of the UK's economic future over the next year or so, said we will hit a recession this year and it'll continue right the way through next year as well. So quite a long-term pessimistic forecast. Now, that's what they say we are facing. One of the candidates for the prime ministership, so we're down to the current former secretary, Liz Truss, and the former chancellor, the man who helped bring Boris Johnson down, the former chancellor, Rishi Sunak. Now, Liz Truss has said, actually, I don't think a recession is something that is certain. And I think that as soon as I get into power, I will cut taxes. Indeed, just this morning, she's written in papers, national papers, saying she will seek to immediately reverse a tax rise that was put in by the current by the former chancellor and her rival for the leadership bid. Now, what's interesting about this, Zane, is that really the Conservative Party, the party of Boris Johnson, and indeed these two, is known for its so-called fiscal economic responsibility. You know, it doesn't make spending pledges without actually saying where that money's coming from. Well, we in the UK now have got one of the biggest deficits in our history, owing to tackling the pandemic and the crisis in Ukraine. And now we're getting this same party offering massive tax cuts to try and avoid a recession. Some are saying it's just not going to work. Some are saying, well, let's give it a go. Either way, the Conservative election countdown now, we should know who's prime minister on the 5th of September, just less than 1 month away.
The problem with policies, Gavin, is the fact that you can't just bring a policy in and keep it there for 3 or 4 months or 6 months and then change it immediately. So it has to be a sustainable policy, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is as well something which one feels, you know, if all the promises being made by this pair were implemented, then it's going to be very, very difficult to see the effect they're having, because, of course, there are so many crosswinds as well, so many other things happening in the world, the cost of living crisis, the fuel crisis. So to see how it's going to pan out is going to be very, very interesting. These are bold measures suggested by Liz Truss. She is the favorite so far, and it would appear to be after a potential slip up with Rishi Sunak being recorded talking to some party members who are going to vote. Talking about how he had redistributed the wealth in the country. I'm afraid to say it was seen widely to be a terrible gaffe that he made talking about this, because it suggested that he was deliberately loading economic good fortune on the areas that vote for his party at the expense of those that don't. Well, it looks like Liz Truss is very much favorite to get her hands on the prime ministership.
If you're running for the prime ministership, you should be careful where you talk and what you say. I think that I thought that would be sort of common sense. Our next story, Gavin, and you know, you look like something here back home again, because we have a number of Cuban doctors in and around the country, and the British unions are warning of a risk to the National Health Service as it's increasingly being reliant on doctors and nurses recruited from outside of the UK and the EU.
Yes, this is quite startling, actually. 34%, so more than a third of doctors joining the health service last year came from overseas. That was a rise of 18% in the previous 8 years. Now, the government is saying, look, overseas recruitment has always been part of the strategy, but the number of foreign doctors within the health service is drastically increasing. And incidentally, it's not just the doctors, it's the nurses as well, which are increasing as well, coming from abroad. So UK medics have been occupying really a dwindling proportion of the overall 1.3 million workforce during the period of the last 8 years. And what the unions are saying, that this is just not sustainable. Indeed, the Royal College of Nursing is saying that ministers need to do much more to reduce the disproportionate reliance on international recruits. There are two arguments, of course. The first is we're taking doctors away from countries that also need doctors. And the second thing is, well, why aren't we recruiting enough? Why aren't we training enough? Why aren't we retaining enough? And so I think this argument is probably getting set to run, and there certainly won't be any short, quick fix to it, bearing in mind the number of years it takes to train as a doctor. But certainly since we left the EU now, we're seeing doctors from many different countries, and some choose to stay, some choose not to, don't particularly like it, and aren't allowed to bring their families over to the UK at the same time.
Mm. Two UK officers are in a bit of trouble with the passing of Donald Burgess at the age of 93 in a wheelchair.
Yeah, so this man was suffering from dementia. He had only one leg, was in a wheelchair, and officers were called to an incident involving this man who had basically started to threaten staff with a knife, it's been reported, down on the south coast of England at St. Leonard's-on-Sea. Now, the two officers tried to restrain Burgess using a sort of incapacitant spray and a baton, but they just couldn't get the knife from him, and then an officer fired a taser, one of these electronic sort of buzz shock treatment guns, as it were. Eventually, they managed to remove the knife and he calmed down. He was then taken to hospital, but has now died 3 weeks on from the incident. So an investigation has been launched into the two police officers who were called. The incident has been referred to the watchdog after allegations about excessive use of force by its officers. Let me repeat, on a 93-year-old man in a wheelchair with one leg and dementia.
Mm. I often wonder, you know, when I speak to a number of traffic officers, I always say discretion, discretion, discretion. You know, exercise your discretion. Find a different way of dealing with the situation, except for just dealing it with it on a very sort of high-handed and very hard manner. A retired teacher is fighting an extradition from South Africa to the UK, but the important thing is that this case was actually highlighted on live national radio.
Yes. So a journalist, well-known BBC journalist, live on radio, who has spoken out in the past about mental health on his show, actually took the opportunity on his show to say that he had been abused at his school as a youngster. Now, he's now in his 50s, so we are talking a long time ago. But it says that it had really taken him this long to think about speaking about it in public. He said he'd seen another pupil attacked, but he said a number of former pupils as well had come out and said, yes, they too were subjected to sexual abuse by a particular teacher. Now, this was at Fettes College and Edinburgh Academy in Scotland. And the journalist, Nicky Campbell, is very well known and says he witnessed the sexual abuse of a fellow pupil. And he now, having mentioned this on his program, has rather been inundated with other people from claiming to be from the school saying they too were abused. Now, this all dates to a teacher who has now retired in South Africa. The identity cannot be revealed for legal reasons. He's 83 years old. He lives now in a gated retirement community. And according to court documents seen by the media here in the UK, they have outlined the fact that he appears to have admitted abusing schoolboys, but is trying to fight extradition out of South Africa. The court documents show that he taught at two primary schools in Cape Town in the 1960s and also admitted apparently that he urges to touch his pupils in South Africa there at that time. So this is obviously both historic but also deeply worrying. The man is still alive. All sorts of calls now for him to be extradited to face the courts for what he's alleged to have done. Yes, Fettes College, very well known in the UK as a private school with, therefore, fee-paying students. and really pretty strict as well in its general sort of format. So some news there that obviously the UK authorities very keen to get this man out of the South African retirement home and managed to extradite him.
You've got another politician in trouble this morning, the leader of the opposition in the UK, and he's been found in breach of the MP's code of conduct, and he wasn't actually just given a, you know, a new iron and a new toaster. As a matter of fact, it's quite sizable stuff that he didn't declare.
Yes, that's right. And it wouldn't be so bad, Zane, if he weren't holding himself himself up as being, you know, squeaky clean, cleaner than clean lean. And it was he, Sir Keir Starmer, who, of course, attacked Boris Johnson for all Boris Johnson scandals. Now we learn from the Standards Commissioner that Sir Keir Starmer, the head of the Labour Party, the party of opposition here in the UK, has one or two scandals of his own. He failed to register 8 interests on time. So MPs, when they're given gifts or when they have financial transactions, must register these within Parliament within a set period of time. And Sir Keir is registered as not putting these in the book. Some gifts from football teams, the sale of a plot of land, and although the breaches are, according to his own party, minor and or inadvertent, of course, the party of government is saying, well, hang on a minute, because you kept criticizing Boris Johnson. What about this? Now, Sir Keir has apologized for the errors, and in truth, these are relatively minor occurrences. But as I said right at the start, here is a man painting himself whiter than white, and clearly isn't quite so white as we thought.
A host by Ban, and we're chatting this morning to Gavin Gray from London, catching up with what's happening on the international field. And also out in the UK and EU. Well, a hosepipe ban comes into force in parts of southern England. In Cape Town and in South Africa, we would call it a ban getting you closer to day zero.
Ah, yes, and I know, of course, that you've not quite had the winter rain that you would like in order to top up your reservoirs. Well, here it's been really pretty dry since May, with, of course, one big heat wave that we had where temperatures reached almost 43 Celsius. They've bubbled around the mid to high 20s mark since. This week, they're back up into the 30s again, and no sign forecast on the short or long-term plans for any rain at all in the south and southeast of England. And that's why customers now in Kent, Hampshire, Sussex, the Isle of Wight, all along the south coast of England and the southeast coast, are now going to be banned from using hosepipes. So that means they can't use a hosepipe to water their gardens, to clean a car, to fill an ornamental pond, or to manually fill a swimming pool. These measures are going to last for at least 3 weeks. The fine could be up to roughly 25,000 South African rand for anyone doing that. Apparently, they're going to be using drones to fly over homes. They are asking people to use a hotline to basically squeal on any neighbors they see watering their lawns with a hosepipe, etc. And they really are determined to get tough. Now, that's all fine and dandy, but I'm afraid that the company in question that's put the ban on also loses an awful lot of water through leaks in pipes. And people are saying, well, hang on, put your own house in order and then tell us to stop using a hosepipe.
This is actually our neighbouring province. We are the Western Cape, and we've got the neighbouring province along our east coast, the Eastern Cape. This is where the problem is that they're also heading into day zero. But what was pointed out is not only the fact that the dams are running empty, but the fact that there are so many leaks and so many water repairs that need to be done, and maintenance on the water pipes that have not been done in so many years. And that has become a problem for the Eastern Cape. The next story, Gavin, and we're chatting to Gavin Gray this morning, a beluga whale has been spotted in France's River Seine.
Yes, extraordinary. Beluga whale, white. So it really shows up in the River Seine. Now, it is about 70 kilometers north of Paris, 44 miles, first spotted on Tuesday. But the problem is that scientists believe this beluga whale is malnourished. It's obviously got lost, but it's malnourished. So all sorts of questions now about how to try and escort this whale out to sea, or try and encourage it to go out to sea. And make the 100-mile, 160-kilometer return back into the English Channel and up to the Arctic, which is its habitat. Now, the problem is that, of course, there was talk about, well, maybe we could lift it out, put it on a lorry and then keep it wet and take it out. But apparently the likelihood it would survive is pretty minimal. However, I'm afraid as the days go by, they are coming up with various strategies. They've thrown frozen herring beside it, live trout for the 4-meter whale to eat. But apparently the animal just swam past both, didn't accept either. So it's now looking quite emaciated. And some scientists believe it actually may have trouble eating, which is why it's not eating. So I'm afraid things are getting really, really a bit desperate now. And one fears the worst. The latest strategy, incidentally, is a vitamin cocktail. Rescuers hope that the cocktail of high-energy vitamins will help the lost whale regain its appetite and the energy needed to turn around and go out to sea. But I'm afraid it's the latest in a series of attempts which so far have failed to work. Fingers crossed this one might just be a bit better.
Gavin, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been a wonderful chatting to you. And of course, hopefully we catch up with you again next weekend. That's Gavin Gray bringing us up to speed with what's happening in and around the world.